You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. We'll be talking this afternoon about kids and gun violence and how social media seems to have exacerbated this issue from a story from our hometown where we broadcast here in the beautiful Bluegrass State and Lexington, Kentucky. A very interesting look at the mentalities, I think, of young people now and what we're dealing with. We'll get into that. Also, thousands demonstrated yesterday, not my president's day, and there were those who I know were outspoken about this on social media, some thinking that, wow, this doesn't need to happen. I contend it is not un-American. It is not un-American. We'll discuss that and why that's important. Also, those who support Trump are saying, We just want him. He's successful. Just let him be successful. And I will ask the question, who's preventing that? If that's what you think, how is that getting thwarted? We'll discuss that as well. Also, apparently suicide rates drop with legalization of same-sex marriage, according to some studies. Is there validity to this? And if so, what does this teach us? And if it has taught us something, how do we handle that then as certainly people of faith who see this as something that we would oppose? We'll talk about what that looks like as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Yesterday, President's Day, and many taking to the streets in formal protests of not my President's Day. Saw some grumblings about this on Facebook with concern about this being un-American and that even equating it to those who would say, well, the Pope is not my Pope. And I understand that sentiment. Believe me, I do. I understand that. But at the same time, I have to look at how our country was founded. And our country was founded on the very ethic of opposition. And I know that we don't necessarily want to embrace that generally. We want to think that, no, our country was founded on unity. That's what it's all about, being unified as Americans. Well, not really. You should probably check the history on that. First, there were many nationalists, or many loyalists, I should say, who were still loyal to the crown, right? They were still loyal to Mother England. They were here as colonists, but we were a colony, a British colony, and they certainly had a tremendous connection to that colonization, to that the mother of Britain, because we were able to get things, right? I think it's a pretty scary proposition that if ships are coming on a regular basis to bring you goods and you decide we're going to cut off that supply, that's frightening, because we were really, at that point, not 100% self-sustaining. So there were many who thought this is going to be a real potential problem. You know, we didn't come like Cortez and burn the ships when we landed on shore. We had a real solid connection. We were a colony. We were here to provide trade into this area, into untapped natural resources. We were here to provide that opportunity. So to say that we were all about unity and that's what it was about, it was not true. We were about opposition. Opposition to oppression, opposition to taxation without representation, right? They were taking our stuff and we got no say in what was going on. Oddly enough, if you watch The Walking Dead and you've been following this plot line, in a nutshell, you've got a ruler who has kind of become a King George type figure, right? Because what he's doing is he's saying, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to provide for you. You just got to provide for me. And so he goes and he takes half of everybody's stuff. That's pretty much what we were dealing with. Now, I don't know if the creators of The Walking Dead were trying to echo the early colonization concept, but it's there. It's clearly there in the plot line. And this is what we were dealing with. Now, there's about to be an uprising. If you're following the plot, there's something brewing that those oppressed colonies, if you will, are not going to stand by for this anymore because they have no representation. They're not being treated with any sort of autonomy or equality. They are being used. They're being raped. And they know that. Same is true with us. This is how this country began. So when we see something like a protest and we say, well, that's not how people should act. Well, they shouldn't break things and loot and blah, blah, blah. We took up arms. We took up arms and began shooting those who showed up in support of the establishment, right? Please realize. What's odd is, and this is what I always find just crazy. It's mind-boggling. There are those who would embrace that understanding and realize that and say, well, yeah, by golly, of course, that's what we did. But these guys shouldn't be doing it today. How do you have that double standard? How do you say, yes, we should have established an independence from England through protest, through violent protest, through war, through a revolutionary war, but anyone who even expresses any opposition to the establishment today, they shouldn't do that. How do you have that double standard? How do you have that? Because that's how this country was formed. It's the same spirit of independence happening today when oppression is at least perceived. So I think we got to have a little bit clearer understanding of our history to begin with, and then to realize that we have protections that say, yeah, you have the right to assemble. And you can protest anything you want to protest. And that can be the presidency. That can be laws that you find to be unjust. That can be Supreme Court decisions. It can be businesses who seem to be doing something that is unethical and perhaps damaging. Protest. You can do that. We have the freedom to do that in this country. And what do protests do? Ideally, they shed light. They get media attention. We begin to look at an issue and go, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. Maybe we need to pay more attention to it. But to say that this shouldn't happen and it's only certain types of people, I've heard crazy stuff like that. Well, it's only those kind of people. Well, you know, it's those people who are upset. You would do the same if you were to the point of that, of feeling that kind of pressure, that type of oppression. That's what happens. But if you're an American and that's what you stand for, all about America, I want you to realize this is how it started. This is nothing new. So not my President's Day demonstrators were essentially those in the colonies who said, that's not my king. No way. We cannot tolerate this anymore. Now, I'm not saying I'm not a fan of necessarily division to the point that we're going to go and break up our country into which I've heard people say, well, why don't New York's going to vote that way, buddy? They could just have Hillary Clinton, whatever. I'm not saying that's good, but it's good to express this stuff and it's good to get it out there because there's healing in that. There's healing in opening up the boil, if you will. As disgusting as that may be, there's healing in that. Which leads me to the next question, because this is a story that the Washington Post, I think, was running, if I'm not mistaken. Those who are now saying, well, this president just he's successful. We just need to let him be successful. Well, who's thwarting that? These protesters yesterday, did they do anything to slow Trump down? I don't think so. People can express what they want to express. If you think he's successful, great. Give defense. Simply say, well, here's what I've seen, this, in the first month. That's more than any president's ever done in a year at times. If that's what you believe, then just simply stand on that. But don't at the same time say, oh, and you don't need to say what you need to say, because that's un-American, right? That's what you got to realize. That's stepping into a totalitarian, a dictatorship type of response that says, you can't say that. If we get to that point of saying the media can't say that, individuals can't say that, you've got to stop saying what you're saying because that's un-American. That's crazy. That's my concern. I want these channels to be open. I want us to have opportunity to say what we want to say, when we want to say it, how we want to say it. And perhaps in the process, be convincing enough to have a better way. I think that's something we've always got to consider. Is there a better way than what we're seeing, or are we kind of stuck with what we've got and this is it and so be it and we kind of got to roll with it? What is it? What is it that we're doing here? I think we've got to look at this very carefully, and we've got to realize that this, you know, they're in the craziest of places, right? The craziest of places. There could be sparks of inspiration. And I would say the absolute best example of that is what we saw 200 some odd years ago. Because in the craziest of places, this tiny, fledgling, struggling, barely surviving in many ways, well, certainly without the aid of the mother country, colony of a small group of individuals said, wait a minute. No. No, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. Then we became the place everybody wanted to come to. Because if there was oppression, we were the savior. We were the promised land. We were the kingdom. This is where you come and you find that solace and you find that opportunity. So I think we've really gotten our Americanism confused with something that's completely different these days. Nationalism and this exclusion of everything else from a standpoint of a nationalist position is not American. And I think we got to realize that. And that's, I know, a tough one to understand because it's God bless the USA. Well, patriots come in all shapes and sizes. And those who are most patriotic in the sense of understanding truly the lineage of our country and believing in this American vision that might look way, way different than those who are merely tribalist nationalists, which I've said before, so isolated that you really don't see the American vision. That's tough. I know that's tough. That's tough for blue-blooded, flag-waving, 4th of July, apple pie-eating individuals. I get that. But there might be something bigger if we start looking at our history that says, wait a minute, oh, wow. Maybe this isn't what I thought it was. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, according to at least one study that the Washington Post cites, and already getting the accusations of fake news on this one, which, so first off, let's address that one, because looking at stats, looking at studies, this has happened since time immemorial, right? Since we began looking at numbers, since we began some sort of boiling down the stats. And of course, go back to Mark Twain, who said, what do we see? We see their lies, their damn lies, and statistics. Because you can basically boil numbers down to say, oh, yeah, look at that. And then are you saying, well, it's not so bad or it's not so good. It's kind of how you look at things. And we know this. You look at the numbers and interpret them as you see fit, and that's kind of the way it goes. So realize that that's all part of this. At the same time, when you can't say everything is fake, and this is a real concern of mine, that we're at a point now where we don't, I don't agree with that, that's fake. That's not a way to handle it. You can simply say, I'm not sure that this really shows the complete picture. Could we, and then appeal to the certainly the news outlet, you could do that. People do that. But don't just accuse it of being fake, accuse them of presenting fake news. It may not be that well received. But if you say, I read this and you presented these stats in a story that seemed to present this position. Are you aware of this, this, and this? Now, guess what? You might get a retraction where somebody goes, oh, you know what? We neglected to look at this because we didn't have this in front of us. That happens. So, again, be the change you want to see in the world. If you think something is wrong, then try to fix it. But don't just decry. Don't just say this is all wrong and then not try to offer some sort of solution. And it's not a solution to simply continue to beat the drum of fake news. That will eventually come back to bite you somewhere along the way. Because then when something really is real and we need to know it, oh, well, it's fake news. Yeah, what? I don't need to know that. This is not real. It's fake. Those guys, they do it all the time. That's my concern. That's really my concern in this. But back to the story. Basically, this is a examination of numbers that essentially say, since homosexual marriage was allowed by law in the U.S., that suicide rates have dropped for same-sex attracted kids. Now, whether that's true or not, based on the opinions that are out there, according to this study, this is what they're seeing. So I think there's a bigger question here. I think the question is there something about embracing people where they are? Now, as people of faith, we don't like to talk this way. We like to talk, we like to talk this way, but do we do this? Do we really do this? And it's kind of something I've said before. Yeah, I look at the lost sheep not as wandering away and getting lost, not as being enamored by something else and deciding, oh, this is attractive over here, and then all the flock is gone, and I don't know where everybody went. The lost sheep that I know, and the times that I've been lost, if you will, and the times I've wanted to be lost, was when I wanted to run away. I just wanted to hide. I wanted to hide from the flock. I wanted to just be away from, I just wanted to like, I can't stand that flock. I'm going to hide out for, I know where the flock is. I know where the flock is. I don't need the flock right now. I want to be left alone because the flock looks like more trouble to me. Now, what brought me back out of that was when I found a couple of things. One was someone saying, it's okay. Wherever you are and whatever you're doing over here, it's okay. I'm not here to change that. I'm not here to judge that. But I will say this, if you'll come over here, we can use you because you've got skills because you've been out there, right? You get skills because you've been out there hiding. Whatever it is that you discovered while you were hiding, whatever it is that you developed, those are valuable to us. We can actually use those. We need what you've got. And it doesn't matter that you've been out here. Now, I think it's human. I think it's just innate in all of us that when we hear an appeal of that nature, that you are valuable, we don't care about your lifestyle choices, we don't care about your attitudes, we just know you've got something to offer. We know you've got tremendous value. Well, what the heck does that do, right? Now that's suddenly opening up opportunities that are brand new, right? Brand new opportunities that, wow, what, where could this lead? But when we start with you're lost, yeah, you basically didn't belong here in the first place. So what you're doing is wrong. When you can finally, whatever, get your stuff together enough to come back to the flock, then maybe we'll have you. You know what I'm going? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, no, thank you. I'm going to stay out here. I'm just going to hide out because that's why I left in the first place. That's why I was hiding. But if we go and say, first off, it doesn't matter that you're out here. And if you want to stay out here, I understand. But you know what? We could really use you because you've got something we're looking for. Now we've suddenly got a completely different dynamic. So when we look at the story, when we compare that attitude to this story that seems to suggest, whether you believe it or not, that suicide rates have dropped for same-sex attracted teens who have been in this reality now for a few years of same-sex marriage being the accepted law of the land, it kind of says that there's something about acceptance. It kind of says that there's something about, it would tend to seem to present the fact that it may be, as I delicately approach all of this, that it may be something about accepting someone for who they are, where they are first. And then by doing that very simple thing and not saying you've got to change or what you're doing is wrong or that's sin or that's bad, just to simply say, you know what you're doing now, that's entirely up to you. That's your thing. But here's what I know we could use you. Now, have we gotten to that point? Are we good at that? I think as Catholics, we got to be very self-critical and realize that generally speaking, we're not. When I had that lifestyle change, when I had that moment of what, really? That was in an evangelical church environment where I was welcomed in after some, what I knew was pretty egregious lifestyle choices of mine. I had ended up with some pretty nasty stuff for me. But at the same time, with all of that, pretty fresh still. It wasn't that long before. We're talking 20 years ago now, but at that time it was still pretty fresh stuff. I was a mess. And me in my mess to be embraced and said, no, we need you because you know what, you get a lot of good stuff to offer. You got what we're looking for. That was a message I'd never heard before, quite frankly. Not in a church environment. I'd heard it in job interviews and things of that nature. That's what you want to hear. But this was a church inviting me in to participate, to be a part of their community. I didn't deserve that, didn't expect that, but it changed me. And I think if we could understand that maybe there's something to this simple fact of what's not complete condoning everything. But again, what does Jesus say? Are you sinless? Throw the rock then. You go ahead and throw that stone. So it's really more about just realizing we're all, I mean, none of us are worthy. We know this. Therefore, rather than pretending as though we might be some way, somehow, just accept that. And then accept it in others. And then collectively find ways to say, okay, what can you do? How can you help us? You know what, you've got skills that we find invaluable that we could really use. And if we work together, who knows? Who knows who we could help? But we might be able to do that together. Can we find a way to do that? I think that's what this study is getting at. And I think that if we as people of faith decided we're going to have this attitude and we're going to extend this attitude, and this is what we're going to ultimately end up doing, is really embracing that lost sheep who's probably not as lost as much as he is hiding. We're going to go find him. We're not going to condemn him. We're not going to accuse him. We're not going to judge him. We're going to embrace him and bring him into the flock because of what he has to offer, not what we have. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. Of course, that's where you'll find lots of other discussions around the things that we discuss here, and more interaction. Always good to do that there. So invite you to come on in and participate in the conversations that take place there, sometimes lengthy, sometimes days upon days long. But find out more, Leo C. Brown at Facebook. You'll find me there. So, disturbing study based on my hometown, which I call my hometown. I've been here for 30 years, so been here longer than any other place I've been. And this has become an issue with 8 teenagers over the course of the last year being killed by gun violence. And for a city our size, Lexington, Kentucky, that's a big deal. So one of our news outlets decided to take a closer look at this and ask some questions and try to figure out what is happening. And I think what is most disturbing is that, well, there's a number of things that are disturbing. One of the things is that there are kids as young as 10 who are carrying firearms. The other is that the kids who were talked to in this interview, they say guns are available to anyone within 24 hours. Easily. You could find something within a day. And you're going to find a pretty powerful handgun that's going to kill someone for about $150, which isn't an exorbitant amount of money. It isn't prohibitive. Let's put it that way. It's not a prohibitive amount of money. If it was $1,500, maybe a little more prohibitive. But someone's going to sell a gun, unlicensed, unregistered, a gun that is possibly stolen. You're going to be able to get it within 24 hours for about $150. And that can go to kids as young as 10. And as it appears, this is what has exacerbated this situation. As crazy as it is. Social media. This is apparently, according to these individuals who are living it, right? These are kids who are there day in and day out with their peers in the communities, in the schools, wherever. Supposedly, the way it is now, because as soon, this is This is what they say now. As soon as a fight breaks out, cameras come out. Right? People are videotaping this. No one wants to be the loser. Right? You think about that. So, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whenever, we didn't have this instant access. Nobody wanted to be the loser. But you didn't necessarily come back. You may plot revenge, sure, right? I mean, come on. We're human. I remember having altercations in middle school and thinking that I was eventually going to kill the guy, right? I thought those thoughts. Like, we've all thought that. That's that rage of middle school and the things that happen and the way we just kind of react. But now it's happening. Instead of somebody just thinking, I'm going to kill that guy, they do. They then decide to go and seek revenge because they were made to look like a fool, and they were made to look like a fool on video that ended up getting shared and getting posted on various social media platforms. And the next thing you know, this is where we are. It's in a bizarre way, kind of like the sharing of photos of girls generally who do stupid stuff and take nude photos of themselves and send them to their boyfriends. And then the next thing you know, that relationship is over, right? Now it's not just for the boyfriend anymore. It's for the entire world to see because he's going to shame her. That happens. Or the social media bullying that takes place because there's somebody who is just so completely bent on making someone look bad that they're going to take it to their social media platform and they're going to berate this individual to the point of shaming them into submission and possibly suicide. That's happened. So this bizarre world that we have now of instant access of information, of instant access of, I mean, we've had kids killed on Facebook Live. We've had that happen. We've had kids tortured on Facebook Live. That's happened. And believe me, I am no fan of censorship. I do not want anything to be locked down, shut down. But there has to be some way, and I'm not sitting here saying I've got the answer. I'm not doing that. So I do not. But I think we got to ask some better questions. We got to ask how the heck, how can this change? What can we do to change this? Because it certainly looks like something is spiraling out of control. And again, in our little town of Lexington, Kentucky, if there's 8 kids in a year who've fallen prey to this, and perhaps some of it could be that, one of them that I know specifically, which was the daughter of the Olympian Tyson Gay, was this caught in the crossfire. But that crossfire was there because perhaps the same sort of we're not going to lose in a way that makes somebody look bad. I don't know. Or I don't know that anybody's peeled that story back enough to know. Was there something caught on tape somewhere? Was there an altercation that made someone look bad, worse, whatever, shamed? Exactly what happened? I don't know that we know. But there has to be some kind of change. There has to be something that we can look at and say, wait a minute, how can this change? And how can we be a part of that change effectively? I think those are the two questions we always have to ask. How can this change? How can I be a part of that change effectively? And, you know, kind of what I was talking about earlier when it comes to acceptance, when it comes to real inclusion, when it comes to real relationship, real connectivity, I think that that's kind of got to be a part of this, but I also know that we're dealing with kids. And I also know the dynamic there is such that you never know. and you may think you're making progress and you may think you're doing really well, and only to be surprised, only to be shocked, only to be caught off guard. I know all of that. Spent a lot of years in youth ministry, spent a lot of years with kids. You're always surprised, always surprised. But at the same time, we have to figure out a way for kids to know that shame, you know what? It's not that shameful. Time will heal that wound. You may remember things and you may look back and go, wow, that was not the easiest period of my life. That was kind of tough to walk through. But you know what? Ultimately, nobody cares about that stuff. Go back to your 30th high school reunion and experience the love of those people who have forgotten all about that. And all they want to do is say, you know what? We have something in common because we're from the same place at the same time. And there's something pretty cool about that commonality. But if you don't give yourself a chance because you allow pride and you allow whatever sense of misplaced justice, the sense of justice is good. I get that. But if that justice is misplaced, then bad things can happen. And I know this is a tough one to sell to kids, but my goodness, we got to sell it to everyone. We got to sell this. We've got to understand that the hinge of human dignity is the hinge. If we hinge on human dignity, we got it. We got it figured out. There is nothing else we need to be concerned about. Hinge it on human dignity and watch what happens. If we really, really, really embrace that and we say, you know what? We are going to, above and beyond everything else, protect the dignity of others. And we're going to ask ourselves in every situation, is this dignified? Is this the most dignified thing I can do? Or is there a better path? And if there is a better path, because the one we are initially tempted to take is not one of human dignity, then we have to reconsider. Now, I know in times of impassioned reaction, that's not what we're asking. I realize that. I get that. I know that emotions can get the best of us. But in these cases where something happens and somebody plots revenge and comes back, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here. There's time to ask. And we need to ask that. And we need to stop and reconsider what we're about to do that could potentially change the course of our lives and the lives of others because we're not thinking from a dignified place. Lots to unfortunately have to deal with on that issue. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.